What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
More regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war on drugs.
Libertarianism.
Socialism.
It's all so confusing. There's so many problems in the world. How am I supposed to figure it all out?
Oh, you think that you should have all the answers? Who do you think you are, the Messiah?
No, of course I'm not the Messiah.
You are not the Messiah.
I know I'm not the Messiah. I hate Messiahs and all their narcissistic bullshit. I hate it. I just want to save the world from it. I just want everything to be okay.
Well, it sure sounds like you have a savior complex.
You're right, I probably do. I'm so terrible.
You're such a self-loathing white girl.
I know, I'm terrible. But I really care about the world.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
I was at Occupy.
No one cares.
I used to live on a commune.
No one cares.
I care. I care so much. But maybe I'm just like Che Guevara. So much idealism in my youth. But now just tons of hypocrisy and ego. A lack of self-awareness. And lack of awareness in general. And just goddamn closed-mindedness.
Enough with your self-indulgent crap. If you really want to save the world, why don't you try listening to other people a little bit? Hear what people have to say and get other people thinking about what changes need to be made. And share your own opinions, too.
So you don't think I'm totally worthless?
No, but I doubt you'll actually save the world. Maybe start by trying to save the world from yourself. Focus, grow from this project, and maybe others will, too.
That's exactly what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna listen and talk with other people, and maybe I'll lighten the topic a little bit by making fun of myself. I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
All right. Hello, everybody. Today, I'm here with Patrick Hilsman and Darren Williams, and we're going to be talking about Aleppo a little bit. We're going to be talking about Vice. We're going to be talking about Opie and Anthony for some reason, because that's super radical, and that's totally going to save the world.
Yep.
All right, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves. Darren, why don't you go first?
I'm a black guy.
Oh, shit.
Yep, just in case everybody was wondering, because this voice can be confusing.
But I'm colorblind.
That is the problem. No, I'm kidding.
I'm kidding.
No, I'm a comedian. I live in Connecticut. Do most of my comedy in New York, and I often get into arguments that make people upset. Like sometimes they DM me and say that was upsetting. We should talk about it on our podcast, and I show up.
That's pretty much what we did a little bit. But I mean, I also posted, can I get some political people? And I got answers from all men. And I realized I have to say I'm looking for political women if I want women. It's very weird. But anyway, so Patrick, tell us a little bit about yourself. And I want to hear a little bit about your Aleppo research background stuff.
Okay, my name is Pat Hilsman. I'm a freelance journalist. I write about basically conflict in Syria and drug policy and police misconduct are sort of like my major topics of interest, and they're becoming more and more related, I think, as we move into 2017.
And you've actually been to Syria, right?
Yeah.
And seen some of what's going on.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. We're going to get to that a little bit later, but first I want to rep your show. It's called The Apocalcast.
That's right.
And when is that on?
That is on Friday at 2 p.m.
Friday at 2 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. I think we can go into this Opie and Anthony conversation we wanted to have real quick, get the funny stuff out of the way, and get into the series.
It's not even that funny. It's scary as shit if you get into it.
Opie and Anthony is scary.
Terrifying.
As shit. Yep. Wait, so the reason why we were talking about Opie and Anthony is because Patrick, before we started recording, described his show as the feminist Opie and Anthony. And I was like, oh my God, guys, my father used to play that shit for me when I was 16 on the way to school. And I told him recently, I was like, Dad,
why did you play me, Opie and Anthony, your daughter, on the way to school? It's all like sex and prison sex. And like, I remember they would like call guys and or guys would like call in and like be like, I'm going to eat my girlfriend out the phone. And like,
well, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong
that wasn't
with
where,
that.
That wasn't actually the scary part. Yeah. That wasn't the scary part. No, to be fair, I think it's one of the most like important recent shows for New York comedy. I think it's in many ways responsible for this like boom, this new golden era
of bros, you mean?
I mean, no, boon of...
I will tell you, most comics I meet, I consider them bros.
Yeah, okay. Well, there's a lot of female bro comics, too, but in many ways, a lot of those female comics are... You can say Amy Schumer
You mean Wendy's?
Yeah.
You mean Wendy's?
No, I don't
That's my turn. My friend Darcy, who's been on the show
I don't know
before.
All these turns. This is the thing we're going to get to.
Oh, no, this is something that was made up. We made this up. No, but I shouldn't have said it like, oh, Wendy's. Wendy is like a girl who's like allowed in the boys' club, so she thinks she made it. But really, she's just keeping all the other girls down.
Look at the faces of the reaction to hearing this, right? Like, it's kind of like...
I'm like the Wendy on my own show, then.
Why are you... What's the face? What's wrong with the faces?
Because what if those are just girls, and you guys are being mean to them?
Oh, no, we're being nice to them. They're the ones that won't let people in. Like, these girls who, like, defend, like, guys who are creepy as fuck. Who are just like, oh,
I mean, nice. I don't know that that's all the female comics that came from Opie and Anthony.
Not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that you called them bro girl comics, and I was like, oh, I call them Wendy.
No, you said you called them bros, and I said, I guess there are bro girl comics. I'm just saying that Opie and Anthony, a lot of New York comedy came out of this show, but also a lot of what's the language? There's
alt right.
A lot of fuck
alt-right.
Shit. A lot of fuck shit came out of
alt right.
Yeah, alt right. It's pretty much the home of it. I think the main host on the show, Anthony. Like, you got to listen to somebody get indoctrinated into, like, some serious, like, white supremacism. And it started out with just a basic, like, yo, the political correctness is destroying comedy. Men should say what they want.
Which I agree with.
Which I agree with, too.
Yep.
Like, there was a time where they used to do a show called a bit called The Most Offensive Song. And it was like Stephen Lynch had this spoof about a black guy living next door to you, and it was racist as fuck, but it was funny. It was funny, and if you give it with the caveat is like, oh, I don't really feel this way, I just like being edgy, you can get away with a lot of things.
Oh, I agree. I actually agree with you there. That's my biggest problem with a lot of these, what I like to call bros. I actually don't think it's wrong to joke about offensive things.
I think, completely.
Or like be offensive in the way you joke.
You have to
let people express themselves. I think that when you get off stage, if you don't take it seriously, then you're a fucking fucker.
Yep. I want to talk.
Okay. Something happened to me where I was at this open mic and I was a little drunk and I like got really upset because this guy made like a really, really fucking stupid rape joke. It was like, women getting raped, that's not funny, but men getting raped, that's funny. And it was like, that was the end. I got like really upset and I said something to him and he actually reacted perfectly. He was like, look, let's have a beer. It's just a joke. I'm trying to do shock value comedy. That's what I'm trying to do. And I was like, all right, like, you're not a piece. And he's like, I understand.
He did that from the stage?
No, this was later.
Oh, okay,
so
cool.
So he was like, look, I'm trying to do shock value comedy. Like, you know, this is what I'm doing. And I didn't mean to upset you. And like, you know, I understand you have PTSD and stuff. And that was fine. But then his friend was like, what do you mean? And got all like flipped out on me. And I was like, dude, like, if you cannot take trauma from rape seriously when you are off stage, you should not be doing this kind of material because you cannot handle it.
I cannot
handle the topic. You are not emotionally intelligent enough to handle talking about this topic. That's my opinion.
I'm of this opinion. I don't think anybody, and I mean this is just a general statement for every person that breathes, I don't think anybody can tell anybody what to say or what to talk about in their material.
You know, no one can tell them what to talk about. They can tell them what they think of it.
You can tell them what they think of it, but you can't be upset if you take your mission to tell other people about their material that their response isn't to immediately accept your opinion. They didn't ask for it. I don't at the same time think that people who have material that elicits that reaction should then blanket themselves in the American flag and say, like, you know, First Amendment, I don't ever have to have take any responsibility for the words that come out of my mouth. Because I think when you have like conversations about political correctness on one end, you have people saying everything you say, it has no reflection of what you think, which is untrue. Uh-huh. And on the other end, you have someone saying everything you talk about is a reflection of how you feel, which is also untrue. There's lots of room for satire. And if you make I hate slippery slope arguments because they're not always valid, but in speech it is. if you make it a point to tell people what they can say and how they can say it for whatever your subjective reasons are or interpretation of the material is, you just open up this thing where now you're just controlling people's thought process.
Well, I don't want to control anybody's thought process. Like I said, I don't care. If you want to make the dirtiest, stupidest fucking... Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I can think that dudes who make ignorant rape jokes are fucking stupid. And they probably are fucking stupid.
Yeah, but
just be real. But I'm saying...
I agree.
When they get off stage... Like, if you're going to make jokes like that, understand how serious of an issue it is when you get off stage.
Well, I would say that this is what is important to me, is that the burden is on you to prove that you're not a shithead.
Yeah.
That's your comedy.
That's true.
That's what kind of drives me nuts. Also, sort of now, like, we're seeing the limits being pushed. Because it's like, now with the refugee crisis in Europe, a lot of people are freaking out, being like, oh, you can't make jokes about Islam, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you are allowed to. Like,
you kind of gotta.
You kind of gotta. It's like, I find myself completely alone in the universe as being someone who's, I think we should make fun of Islam, and I think we should accept more Muslim refugees.
I'm with you.
We should absolutely accept more Muslim refugees. I mean,
and they're like, separate things.
I'm a liberal. I often find myself dissatisfied amongst the company of liberals because I see how they're starting to think the way what I think bad conservatism is like, where it's just this this dogmatic lack of, you know, real curiosity about the issue.
Oh my!
Is that why you reacted that way to the Wendy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah, it's just as quick. You can just generalize ad hominem something, and
well,
then just,
I mean, nobody's saying that we're not. I mean, I guess it's like a general thing that there
are. It's
big
in feminism.
I mean, no, there are women who like get into these boys' clubs and then pretty much don't listen to girls about anything. Like,
I'm going
to
take this moment to remind everybody that I'm the black guy in the room. And the only reason I'm saying that is because I identify with that feeling. When you have like a movement that you represent that you think is vitally important for your people, you feel a dissatisfaction towards people of your group that don't best represent what you think they should. There's like a thing in black movements called the upper tenth, which is like a W.E.B. Du Bois thing, which is say anybody, the upper tenth of every class of people is responsible for moving and uplifting that people.
Sure.
So anytime you see people in spaces of influence and you don't see them living up to what you think is satisfactory, you want to call them something or label them something. It's easy to call everybody a coon.
I also don't think it's wrong to actually be a Wendy. Like, I'm not going to be mean to those women based on that.
I know, but labeling matters because, like, I do think, like there be. I used to call people coons all the time just for, like, saying some shit I didn't agree with. But it got so popular, like, people call Barack Obama a coon. It's just a ridiculous notion. But once you let that beast out of the can, and it's just, you can just label things and just dismiss it.
I mean, you're telling me Ivanka Trump is not a Wendy?
Okay, but
oh
who,
my God, yeah.
Yeah, you can go. It's the spectrum, though. There's, like, millions and millions of women.
I mean, but see, here's the thing. I have friends who are Wendy's. I have friends who I think are wonderful, wonderful women. And I'm just like, one day you're going to understand that something's going to happen in that group of guys, and you're not going to like it, and it's going to be creepy as fuck, and none of them are going to listen to you. See, I'm saying, like, that is the experience of being a woman. Some girl gets raped or harassed or gets assaulted, and everybody wants to prove that she's a liar, including these Wendy's. See, that's what it is. Like, I understand what you're saying. It's not cool to give it a label and whatever, but it's just like, why do they get to be let off the hook for being so shitty?
I just can't imagine, and this is, I think, the thing that, like, I sometimes bump into, like, a little bit of conflict with feminist discussions, in that I get what oppression feels like and what feeling like you're in a continual onslaught of some shit that's unfair coming at you feels like and nobody paying attention to it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I would argue that I probably feel it a little bit more than feminists do.
Probably more than white feminists.
More than most. I mean,
what about, like, black feminists? You think that you feel it more than black women?
No, I think black women are definitely face oppression due to just sexism, for sure.
That's what I'm saying.
But I don't think that their form of oppression is discussed in feminists, you know.
No, you're
rhetoric.
Right. There's multiple kinds of feminism.
And there's a conflation
there's
there.
There's intersectional feminism that acknowledges that, and then there's, like, what's called white feminism, and then there's actually the womanist movement, which is women of color
I would argue that the way that white feminists dictate the language in feminist discussions is so, like, against what is needed in communities of color that is creating, like, more divisions between...
Like what?
Black women's oppression from men isn't, at least black men, isn't a discussion about power over black women, black men having power over black women. And so when you talk about men in ways where they're the enemy, masculinity is the
masculinity is not the same as men.
Well,
I just want to put that out there. When also, you say masculinity, when I say masculinity, I'm not talking about men.
Also, changing definitions of masculinity are important too. I think
I think those are all social constructs.
Yeah,
and absolutely, but they still hold to the way people treat each other in society.
What I'm saying is, what I think hurts black women from black men more than anything is the oppressions that black men face. Not a situation where black men have power and are asserting it over black women. And that's different in the relationships between white women and white men. And so I see the language of white women being this anger and vitriol towards the oppressor in white men. And they communicate that to black women. And the black women throw that at black men. And we're like, I'm just getting shot. I don't have any power to do any of that. I think hypermasculinity in the black male community is an aspect of, that needs to be discussed.
Okay, that's what I was about to say.
But I would say that's also a result of oppression and not asserting power.
That's a result of defense. Like, I mean, I don't know because I'm not black, but I would assume that it's like, the only thing I can relate it to is being Jewish, and I don't feel oppressed as a Jew in America, but I do know that those emotional tendencies get passed down of like being fucking hunted. Yeah. So I'm just going to assume it's like a trauma thing.
I think it's just, it's a PTSD thing. It's also like just black men want to assert themselves where they can because they can't assert themselves anywhere. And
that
I think it in many ways hurts black women.
Well, I wanted to say something about the having to explain what white privilege is to people. It can be frustrating because you'll have the situation of, oh, well, you know, a black guy with a lot of money, isn't he more privileged than a white guy who's poor? Yeah, in some ways, for sure. But not in every way. You know, the power dynamics are complicated.
Intersectionality. So,
right.
That's
if
the
you're
point.
A white protester who's arrested by a black cop, there is a double. There's two different versions of power at play there.
And that black cop probably is like sort of what I'm calling the Wendy, but you don't want the.
No, because I think I'm fundamentally against trying to label people because once you start like. I have to communicate with racists all the time because there's racists everywhere. And if I start demarcating between different types of racism, I'm basically doing this weird math in my head where I'm trying to figure out which type of person I'm okay with dealing with, which is I don't think a necessarily the healthiest way towards figuring out a problem. And so I think most people, if you're not ready to have the argument with somebody and you're not in the headspace where you feel like dealing with the stress of communicating with somebody that doesn't get something, don't do it.
Yeah, that's called
like,
my Facebook feed.
Don't do it at all. Because if you're not going to do it the right way, doing it the wrong way is actually hurting everyone.
But I think you should do it, though.
If it makes you feel better, but...
It never makes me feel better. I'm definitely guilty of the
I think it becomes a conversation about what your end goal is. Because there's some people who are trying to fight oppression because they need to save themselves, and there's other people who are trying to fight oppression because it feels good to fight oppression.
I can
say two things here. I can say that I get in a lot of political ideological discussion. You and I talk on the internet. I mostly know Darren from the internet.
Yeah.
And we argue politics, and actually you're one of my the people that I enjoy talking to on there because you're not a fucking idiot.
Thank you.
But I mean, I get a lot of like, you see that guy who keeps like posting videos of his face? He's like, well, I think that it's like an experiment if I show my face. And I actually think that's interesting, but his whole deal is he's always just like, Well, actually, it's always got to be like, you're wrong, I'm right on every single thing. And I'm sure I'm guilty of it, too.
I just assume everybody's wrong, including myself.
Yeah, I assume that I'm wrong. I think that I'm right in some ways. Like, I feel like a lot of the arguments I get into on Facebook are like, don't be angry about this. I'm like, I should be angry about this.
You asked me what I thought the number one problem, what would save the world, is the name of the show. And, I come from a weird background. Like, I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, whoa, man.
Yep. And my dad was, like, an elder. I used to knock on doors. I was, like, a minister for a long time. I spoke to, like, tons of people.
And now you're a comedian.
Yeah. But I got kicked out of the organization, like, the whole shun excommunication thing.
Oh, damn.
And so, like, I was born in a cult. I came out of it, and I have people who are still in it. And so when I talk to my family members about, like, you know, crazy dog, when I see the reactions to, like, cognitive dissonance and not being able to just interact with information that goes against their thinking, I'm realizing I see that in everybody about everything. And so, like, hyper-liberals have their doctrinal thought processes about...
Even anarchists.
All of them have their own thing. Very few of them actually spend enough time pretending they're wrong enough to research enough competing information to really say they know it, but everybody feels like vindicated by talking about it to other people, so we're all just talking at each other. And
I'm guilty.
That's kind of why, not to shift gears too much away, but that's kind of why, like, I'm seeing a lot of people talking about, like, let's have sympathy for Trump voters and all that.
Yeah.
And I want to have sympathy for them as fellow human beings.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I don't really feel obligated much because it's like, if somebody's different from me, I'm kind of interested.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I've interviewed a lot of fanatics and, like, jihadis and crazy people. And there's this fundamental curiosity that they have. They're like, oh, your girlfriend's Jewish. That's so interesting. You know, and there's a guy, he's like Al-Qaeda or something. And, you know, so to them, that's the enemy. But they're like, there's this sort of curiosity about what they consider the enemy that is just so fucking fascinating and human in this weird way.
You don't see that in Trump voters?
Nope, not at all. I don't see the slightest curiosity. And that's what drives me nuts. They're like well, Hillary Clinton is a traitor because she exposed her email to the potential of Russian hacking.
So you mean to tell me Al-Qaeda?
But we love Russia.
I want to say something real quick.
I can't believe that that's true. I can't believe that there's a fundamental difference between an Al-Qaeda terrorist or a Trump voter.
Okay, here's what I'm saying. I say there's a lot of different kinds of Trump voters. That's important.
I think we just hate them.
Margo from Burning Bridges, it's a show on Radio Free Brooklyn, which you are listening to right now, had some Trump supporters on her show, and they were three of them, and they actually all sounded super different. It was fucking weird. And actually, I want to say, so I think there are Trump supporters that I don't agree with their thinking, and I think they voted for tax reasons, which I think is an inherently classist thing to do. But I think, or like a lot of the reasons are just like ignoring how that all connects and interplays with trying to reach like the highest amount of equality we can have. They don't understand that that goes against that. But I think that there are Trump supporters who, I totally like lost my train of thought. So Trump supporters, jihadi, what are we talking about? Oh, Trump supporters who are actually like mentally ill. Like I actually do think bigotry is a mental illness.
Yep.
And
I don't think bigotry is.
You don't think bigotry is a mental illness? Mm. You don't think that like looking at someone else and thinking that you're better than them based on looks or sexuality?
I think everybody finds spaces where they can do that, whether it's political, ideological.
I mean, probably, but you don't think that there's like an extreme version of that where it's like there might be some screws loose? Like, how do we treat bigotry?
I don't think we've ever had an honest enough conversation about race and bigotry for people, especially white people, to even be able to identify it amongst themselves or others. And I think labeling Trump voters as the ultimate definitions of bigots makes all the bigots in the left feel much better about themselves.
I don't think they're that. I think they're just the ultimate
anti-intellectualism is the problem.
Do you think it's anti-intellectualism or do you think it's anti-empathy?
No, I think it's anti-intellectualism.
What do you mean by anti-intellectualism? Okay, so here's the thing. I am not an anti-intellectualist, but I call myself an emotional activist because I think that there's a lot of silencing of feelings and there's a lot of like logic, which is like that's why I freak out so much because people just like want to use the word. I'm like, that's not even logic. You're just using the word logic to make
it. I think it's really important to be logical about movements that put people's lives on the line. And emotion, while it's motivating and it's a great fuel, if it isn't tempered with like a fundamental understanding of nuance, it's destined to fail itself.
But do you know what I'm saying, though, with that whole like shitty logic, like people just saying I'm the most logical and rational and this.
It can be cold, but I think those people are important.
About close.
No, they're called mansplainers, actually. No, actually, I've never met anybody who says logic and ration and like uses that within their political arguments.
No, I'm saying the discipline of being logical, not saying be logical.
Oh, no, actually being logical is one thing, and like using it as a way to shut down other people's like arguments by being like, oh, well, you're just not logical. You're just not, like, that's kind of shitty.
But getting like back to like Syria and jihadis, I see the same thing in mass shooters. I see the same thing in Trump voters. The fundamental thing is the first thing you want to do is you feel victimized. And the second thing you want to do is let the world know you're victimized. And the third thing you want to do is if you can't change your problem, you want to let everybody know how mad you are. Yeah. And that's the same thing in every person that's a problem in this world.
Well, it drives me nuts when people treat it like it's a big fucking mystery.
It's not.
Like the Russian ambassador to Turkey got shot yesterday, right? I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see that.
Okay. Like, I'm not saying it's right to kill anybody, but people are like, why did this happen? It happened because he fucking deserved it. Like, are you kidding me?
Did the
like,
ambassador deserve it? Or did
absolutely. Are you kidding me? He's part of the process that bombed that country into oblivion. And then suddenly they come out on TV and they say, oh, now that we've displaced 11 million people and forced 4 million people into exile, Now it's time for us, the people who are in charge of all these machinations, it's time for us to play nice and have a nice little art exhibit.
You're familiar with like Ta-Nehisi Coates,
yeah.
The writer. Mm-hmm. He wrote a great article a couple months ago about the expected expected advent of anti-police, you know, mm-hmm. violence.
I'm not saying it's right,
which
by
is
the way.
Okay, and I'm agreeing with you, but you have to tease apart who is deserving of death. Is this ambassador deserving of death, or is the system that he represents deserving of death? And if you're arguing that yes, you should expect an institution like Russia to have things like this happen to itself, based on its practices, that is true.
Yeah.
If you're a police officer in the United States of America, you should not be surprised why every now and then a police officer gets randomly shot in the hood.
Exactly.
I would not argue, though, that the police officer that got shot in the hood deserved it.
I wouldn't
which
either.
Which is different from saying the ambassador had it coming.
Here's why it's not different, okay? Because the cop is just a foot soldier.
Okay.
Okay, I would argue that maybe the police chief that spent 30 years implementing the policies deliberately and spending every single day trying to construct racist policies, maybe he does deserve it.
I don't see ambassadors as that type of person.
But that is the person that does it.
I thought Putin says, hey, this is what it is. Go out here and rep this, or maybe I'll kill you.
Sure, but
that's what Putin does.
But here's what my point is that what goes around sometimes does come around.
That's
and
true.
And to say that, oh, because all I do is give the orders that kill thousands of people. All I do is promote the diplomacy that kills thousands of people.
I hear what you're saying. Everybody's kind of like, if you're part of this thing, you're part of the thing. But like,
right.
But I hear what you were saying. Like,
we got to acknowledge humanity.
Is it the person or the system?
We have to acknowledge all of our predispositions towards being moved in horribly unethical ways.
That's what my point is.
Based on what systems we fall in.
Right.
That ambassador could be you, and it could be me. Were we born in different situations? And I think the feeling you're feeling right now, which is to say, no, I'm different.
I'm not saying I'm different. I'm just saying if I was born to that situation,
you don't know.
I would expect you expect.
So here's something I've been thinking
about.
So I want to talk about something sort of semi-controversial that I've been thinking about lately. So sometimes when I hear that, like, you know, I'm sure that I have like racist things that I'm not aware of, you know, but like I'm not like a blatant, like, I hate people of other races.
I don't think anybody is, though.
What?
I don't think anybody.
Some people are, though. Like, I'm saying, but not today. I'm talking about, let me get my point. Yeah. My point is, like, when I hear my father talking about how, like, his grandmother would say, oh, the colored man, like, you know, like, weird, or, like, be, like, afraid, or, like, not want to, like, be around people who are black, you know what I mean? Like, so I think about that, and in my head, I'm like, oh my God, like, if I was living at that time, like, I would totally, like, not think like that because I would be smart enough to do it. But what's going on, like, right now, like, how, like, I literally feel prejudiced against white dudes. Like, I literally do feel that way. Like,
I do.
I mean,
no,
but
you shouldn't either. No, nobody should. But I'm not saying
no, but what I'm
wrong,
saying is, like, I'm, like, cautious around white men more than I am around other kinds of men. I definitely am more likely to invalidate white men. I'm more likely to silence them. I'm more likely to tell them that their time is done and, like, say,
and
like, really
thing,
dramatic things. And is that okay, though?
It's probably okay because it's based in a reality that there's a large contingent of white men that just absolutely have lost their goddamn minds.
I mean, I say dramatic things to white men. I'm like, your reign is over. This is our space.
But
now.
I would argue,
get over it, frat boy.
And I've been thinking about this a lot. I would argue that this whole white allyship thing,
oh boy,
has backfired for some of the really oppressed people, because white people don't know how to be oppressed, and they tend to
white women don't know how to be oppressed.
Not
in the same way, but
they
don't
know how to actually work with disparate groups of people and win an argument over the course of sustained years, in spite of non-interest in your position.
Well, here's,
and it becomes very emotional, and it becomes very castigating.
What are you talking about? Please keep going. I'm a little confused.
Go ahead.
No, I want to hear what he was saying.
I don't know how much of the language that you just expressed would ever convince somebody, if you wanted to change their mind, to change their mind.
And which language?
The white. Your time stuff. Is over.
Oh yeah, that's not helpful. Yeah. Oh, it's not helpful.
But it's a large portion of the rhetoric, and it fails to make the points that I think could be made, which is that none of you know what you're talking about, and there's some knowable information that if you allowed me the time to explain it to you, you'd go, oh shit, I've been wrong all this time.
Oh, so you're saying like instead of like. Being like nasty, like send information articles and stuff.
I'm a comic book guy, and Peter Parker's uncle said, "With great power comes great responsibility."
But you know what I'm talking. Hold on, let me finish. So you know what I'm talking about, right? Like what? By saying that's what you're saying. Like offer information rather than anger. And
I'm saying
like
either
shut down.
Say, hey, I can recommend some book. Like I don't get in all day arguments with people anymore about race, but I do say, listen, man, you don't know what you're talking about, and if you would like some books or links, I can recommend things to you. Otherwise. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you.
But see, it's more than that. See, that's the part that I'm not sure if you and I can see eye to eye on. Like, there's literally, like, a way that most men, specifically white men, talk to me that is the whole problem. That, like, I cannot, like, send them, like, a book filled with conversations I've had with men, and I don't know if they will even see.
They won't. They never even ask
for
links. So
that's what I'm saying. I can't set. It's no. So like the movement that like I'm part of, like that, or like I don't know how to be oppressed or whatever you were saying. Like I
because that fight doesn't win the argument.
But I'm saying I literally like how do I win the argument then if I cannot literally hook them up to a machine that puts in their that has them understand in their brain that the way they are speaking is a way.
Solidarity. That amongst yourselves amongst and finding larger spaces of influence where you don't have to, on one-by-one basis, win an argument with
obviously, women. I have larger spaces of queer white women and femmes that feel the same way as me. We just don't. What I'm saying is there's always going to be these hard-headed bros who don't fucking get it.
All right, here's an example. All right, you know what? I'm not going to say the example. I want you to talk because you actually know a lot more than me, so I'm tired of you.
No, I
want you. I don't want to. I keep feel like I'm stopping over your.
Oh no, I just had one short little aside. Is how to talk to annoying bro-y white men.
Don't talk to them.
No, actually, I think stooping to their level is kind of useful sometimes.
Yeah, you gotta have the hard language.
Yeah, because a lot of the time when people will be like, "Oh well, you know, this black man who was shot could have been a threat from 30 yards away, unarmed," and I'm like, "Listen, the police know that black people are not stupid, right? Mm. They think you're stupid." And that you'll believe any bullshit explanation they give for gunning someone down in the street. They think you're a fucking idiot. That's the way I put it. You know,
that's a good way to put it.
Or also another one is I always talk about this cab driver I had who's like, "Hey, bro, what do you do?" I'm like, "I'm a journalist." He goes, "What do you cover?" I go, "I cover Syria." He says, "Have you ever been out there?" I go, "Yeah, 8 times." And he's like, "Why are you guys all so rough on Trump?" And I was like, "Do you want an honest answer?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I say, "Because he's really fucking stupid, and because he doesn't know what he's doing." And he's like, "But don't you understand that ISIS wants to kill you?" And I was like, "Listen, dude, if you've ever been afraid of ISIS, like I just told you that my job is to go to Syria and cover this, right? If you've ever been afraid of ISIS, it means you're a stupid asshole."
Yeah, there's not a really. Problem here. I'm more afraid of like getting hit by a taxi cab.
Yeah, you got to drop to their level on a certain
by
level,
a guy that used to
you don't
that
think
used to
that
be in ISIS.
It makes sense. Okay, so I'm gonna be honest.
Yeah.
I really don't know that much about ISIS. I didn't vote for Trump because I thought he was saying a lot of stupid shit, and I thought probably whatever his tactics were with dealing with all this shit was fucking stupid, and I'm not, like, so afraid of ISIS that I want to fuck over all these other groups that I think Trump is going to fuck over. But sometimes I get afraid. I hear crazy shit, you know, I hear, like, oh, this and this happened at, like, whatever in the name of ISIS, and this, and I don't know what's ISIS, I don't know what's not,
but
you know what I mean? It's a lot of shit.
I just wanted to get back to the point about how you articulate to people that you don't agree with. I think it's specifically with women, and I always use this example, is being an oppressed minority is not a definition of how upset you feel in your country. Being considered a minority is based on your ability to influence policy in a democratic institution, which is to say, are there enough of you here to get yourselves represented in the democratic process, which is just merely a counting of your votes based against the number of people who disagree with you. That doesn't exist for women, specifically white women.
Well, yeah, because most of them voted for Trump.
And so if that is true, there is no, like, if black people had 55% of the vote, we wouldn't be talking to any of y'all. You wouldn't see us on the street. You wouldn't see us marching. You wouldn't even see me on this podcast trying to talk about race. We would just be saying, "Yo, black folk, what you want to do?" We'd vote for it, and that would be it. And that's how democracy works. And I think
Well, we're actually not in a democracy. We're kind of in a republic.
Kind of. Yeah.
But it works that way still. I know we're not in a year of one singular vote counts, but the ability to influence electoral college
is there. You're right about that.
And so I don't know all of the oppression that faces women is about men being against their interests as much as it is women not being for their own interests. And so
that is definitely a good point I think there's a lot of internalized sexism, as I like to call it, or I see it. Like I say, a lot of them like, oh, that. I mean, there's totally still like. See, I don't see it as much in the groups that I hang out with, because I hang out with like queer women, queer men. You know, like people who are not like
into men at all.
Well, I mean, I'm into men, but I'm saying like. Not into picking apart other women. Like, I don't look at a woman and, like, size her up and decide if she's prettier than me. And if I do think she's prettier than me, I'm probably into her. But that's or I'm, like, wanting to build her up. You know what I mean? Like, my friend who I used to sleep with started dating a new girl. And my reaction was not to knock her down. My reaction was to elevate her. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And that is, like, that can sound so, like, lazy and whatever, but that is, like, literally part of undoing.
That's part of undoing
the narrative.
Yeah.
So, but I'm saying, like, most women are not there yet.
But what I would argue is most women who are that 54% Trump voter, they're marrying a dude, a bro, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that guy's going, listen, these feminists hate men. And, like, when they go to listen to feminists are like, listen, you tiny dick little rapist. Like, the girl's like, yeah, wow, I guess they do. And so if you fall
like
into
that.
The.
Can I say that, though? I hate when we use the tiny dick thing.
Yeah, it's so silly.
Like, I actually think that that's anti-feminist, because I actually think that, like, who gives a shit what your genitals look like?
I always get mocked for my tiny dick, and it hurts.
Like, I would literally date someone who didn't have genitals.
Same, it's not a problem.
Like, I don't care what people's genitals look like. Do you know what I'm saying? It's stupid. That's like the whole, and that's where we get into like trans feminism, which is a whole other thing. Right now we're just talking about men, women.
And this is like, I'm trying to avoid this hot button, because I have never been able to land my position on trans culture without somebody saying I'm being bigoted.
Well, say your position and I'll shut you down, babe.
I fundamentally believe that sex and gender gender is a social norm. It's a social construct. Being feminine or masculine isn't really a thing. Everybody has these things.
There are these traits that have been grouped into some of them are considered more valuable than others in our weird capitalistic masculine, hyper-masculine society. That's what I'm... When I talk shit about masculinity, I am not talking about men.
I know you aren't.
Talking about the men who embraced that and want to shut me down, because I'm very sensitive.
So we believe that that's fundamentally true.
That what is?
That gender is a social construct.
I think
yes,
so,
but I also think that when you get into... So right now you're talking some weird, what it's called...
I'm just...
They call them TERFs. They're called trans exclusionary radical feminists.
I don't know what you call it. That's what they're called. Whatever you want to be in a free liberal society, you should be allowed to be that.
Yeah.
Trans, cis, whatever. However, you should not in any space in a free society be arguing false truths. And I just think that's because...
And what's a false truth?
I don't think... that a trans person is the product of a biological alignment.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to tell you. Have you read into, like, actual brain chemistry stuff about this?
I've read a lot of different competing stuff.
Okay, well,
I'm going to qualify by saying I'm not a master on this.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you.
The soul and not the
body. I'm going to tell you that a lot of anti-trans. So you have to understand how much.
I don't feel like this is also anti-trans either.
You don't sound anti-trans, because I feel like if there's a trans person right here right now, you'd likely try to respect their pronouns, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm not trying to offend
anybody. You're
not
trying to keep them out of any space and whatever, whatever. So maybe I would recommend like reading more by sources that are not transphobic.
It's like saying, like, if you're a homosexual person or a lesbian person, you're saying I was born this way.
Well, I can tell you that I become more gay the older I get. So I don't know who was born that way.
I think if sex is a spectrum, you're not born that way at all.
Yeah, but I will say this. There have been studies done that show that certain parts of the brain are different for trans
folks. But there's different studies that show certain types of brains are different for psychopaths versus people who aren't psychopaths.
Well, I mean, that's probably true.
Okay, so if that's true, then it's a psychological...
Yeah, it's the soul.
It's
but
not...
But what I'm saying is, look...
If that's true, you might not actually have to spend a lot of money fundamentally changing physical parts of your body
I think that's kind
of... depends if you want
to. I think that's kind of... Okay. I don't know how many trans people you talk to, but I have a lot of trans friends. And let me tell you, for a lot of people, it's a life or death situation. Like, honestly.
I don't disagree with that.
I'm sorry. I want to say this. This is really important.
I'm going to let you say it. But you got to let me respond.
Of course I'm going to let you respond. But right now, you're talking stuff that, like, I know about. There are people who take the hormones that they need for the first time, and literally it's the first time they felt like they're functioning. And I don't really care what the reason for that is. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you need a fucking hormone and, like, a sex change to be happy, by all means, get one.
Okay. Can I respond?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, I didn't contend with any of that.
I'm sorry. You have to understand how much I have to.
You gotta let me finish.
Yeah.
You can have this feeling at age 17, correct?
Younger. You can have this feeling at, like, out of the womb.
Can you potentially change this? Does this feeling potentially change at age 60?
It has. There are people who have gone in and out.
Okay. Yeah. Can you go in and out from removing a portion of your body?
No, that's why people do go through psychological. Okay.
And so my argument with trans culture is that there are parents and there are adults who care for their child grappling with this new issue and questioning whether they should encourage their child to get a surgery that, one, they might not be able to afford, two, they might regret one day, and three, is irreversible in some cases. If you're going post-op man to woman, you
but
can't
minors
get that
don't
back.
Do it.
If you're
teaching your child that there's no other way to deal with this legitimate feeling that you should be respected for and allowed to go through.
But there's a lot of trans people that don't do the operation.
I agree.
There are also trans people.
I just
who
don't
come,
want
there
people
There are people
to...
who come out of the womb who, like, within the first couple of years being able to talk, go, Mommy, when's my penis going to fall off?
Man,
Mommy,
can't...
when am I going to have a vagina? So I'm going to finish something here. Actually, the earlier you start, the more, quote unquote, passing you will be, and a lot of people in the queer community don't give a shit about passing, but unfortunately it does lead you to a safer lifestyle the earlier, the more you can pass.
No, so that's about a violent threat towards the person.
Yes, there is, and there's also a lot of trans people do want to look as cis as possible. Some people do. So I guess my point is if I was a parent and my child within the first couple years was like, oh, I don't want to. It was like obvious.
You started giving him the pills to change him.
Can you let me finish my sentence?
Okay, go ahead.
But they started showing me like signs that they're trans. It would be a very difficult, priorities to weigh there, because it's like, is my child going to be mad at me that I didn't let them start earlier? Are they going to, you know what I mean? There's a lot of shit to weigh there. It's very complicated.
If my child, and I wouldn't be surprised if one day science came up with the ability to do this. If you can literally turn yourself into a white person, and my child said that he wanted to be white and he was going to start taking these pills at age 7 to turn into a white person, so that by 18 he can be safer as a white American in the society that treats white people more fairly, I would not let my child alter his being so that he can feel safer in a society that doesn't accept
him. Right, but here's what I...
But there's more to it than the safe aspect.
I'm not finished. I also am not saying that parents who decide to give their children these hormones are abusing their child. But what I am saying is that if you finger wag and moralize at parents who question these things for legitimate reasons, which is to say, I want my child to feel comfortable as the person they are,
right,
whether they identify as a man or a woman, and whether society accepts them for that or not. And I don't think that society's pressure should encourage me to feel like I have to change my child. I don't think that the liberal response would be to say that you are an anti-trans bigot.
Well, my response to somebody who didn't want to medicate their child, see, that makes sense to me. I understand being caught. Like, I mean, I wouldn't want to put my kid on any medication they didn't really need to be on. However, let your kid live as a, like, see, if I had a son and he wanted to be a girl, yeah, put a dress, a wig, whatever, teach you how to do, you know, whatever.
But he's also still going to be boxing. you can wear the dress, but I think...
Sorry, I got mad gender or whatever protective of, like, my non-existent child.
Yeah.
But the argument you said about a white person, I think that actually sort of gets to the core of what being trans is, in the sense that I don't believe in, like, God or any of that stuff, but I still think that the soul is a fundamentally real thing, right? Mm. So I don't believe that the soul of a black person or the soul of a white person is inherently different. It's just not. That's bullshit. The experience is different, unquestionably, which is
For
social
sure.
contract and all of that, right? Social construct and all of that. But the soul, the male soul and the female soul are different.
Are they?
In some ways, I believe so, yeah. And I think that the...
What?
That's very spiritual.
I don't think above or below.
I don't agree with that. I think that there's... I have a very masculine soul.
I think there's
soul.
Differences. I think
okay,
there's differences.
That's fine. And you can. But that's what my point is that I think that it's... It's yin and yang,
I felt the aggression.
But if a desire to be white is not a desire to be anything that is fundamentally meaningful to the soul, whereas the desire to be male or female really is something that's meaningful to
the
soul.
What are the fundamental differences between male and female that would separate souls?
I mean, I will say this. I mean, I'm also very careful when talking about this stuff because I don't actually believe that there's just a yin and yang. I actually think there's a lot more. But
sure, of course.
I think that there's definitely, like, if you want to look at any, like, duality, like, I definitely feel like there's this sense of, like, destruction that comes from masculine, and I definitely feel that way. Like, I feel like I shout down a lot of things in my anger and my, like, feeling of justice or whatever. But then I also have, I feel like the feminine is, like, a very... creation, like communal. Like I honestly think of masculine as hierarchy, and I think of feminine as communal.
I think it's 100% social because there's one woman in this room and two men in this room, and the one that's been shouting people down the most is the woman. And
have I been shouting you guys down?
And that's not a problem because I
have I been shouting you guys
yeah,
down. In what way? By being like, let me finish.
The trans part got a little bit shouted down. It was more masculine, I would
was
say.
It, was it?
It was more masculine.
Was
I would
it
say.
Shouting down, it or was, were you interrupting was, me every time I tried to make
no,
a point?
No, we'll have to re-list it. We'll have to see what's happening.
Were
now.
You interrupting
we'll
me every time I tried we'll to make to a point? Would I be made sentence and you were trying to immediately tell me that I'm wrong because that's what men do to women? They tell them to be quiet. Do you think that my tendency to shout people down is more of a reaction or an action?
I don't know. I think it's just an unhealthy way to carry a dialogue.
You think it's unhealthy? You think I'm unhealthy because I want it because
no,
I'm
said
loud?
Shouting people down is unhealthy. I don't know anything
is
about it.
Is shouting people
you.
Down unhealthy when oh, yeah. they don't let me finish? And when
For
it,
sure it
so
is.
So I feel like you're, I feel, okay, so that, I actually feel like this is like a victim blaming thing right now, actually. I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like
men,
ad hominems? What do you mean by ad hominems?
You label something and then not have to deal with it.
Oh, no, I am dealing with it. I'm telling you exactly how I feel about it.
I haven't been allowed to talk yet.
Okay, well, you've talked a lot, who? I think that what happens... Look at you guys making icon. Okay, boys club.
It is boys clubby right now because...
It is.
It's getting boys club because I think we both
You're
know what's going
physically
on.
Above us.
Yeah.
Well, this is also a position. In the chair.
No, because I do think that if you rest comfortable in the understanding that you know where you're coming from, whether someone else knows that or not, you can wait and get there eventually. So I'll wait. But I'm.
Thank you, Daddy.
I'll wait. I'll ignore it.
I think,
although you know,
that I literally feel like you just gave me a lecture and like we're like using ad hominem, so that's not an actual point. So what I'm saying is,
I don't think I sounded like that.
I mean, you sounded like that to me, but I think that there is definitely like this sense of whenever I get angry or like talk louder or interrupt somebody, it's my fault and it's not actually like something that's a reaction to anything. Where I feel like I've been most of the time, if I'm in, you guys don't even acknowledge this. Being in a room with two guys, you guys are two guys on my show. I'm the girl starting
that.
It, and
no,
it's, it's definitely a very different social dynamic. So
I don't question
to,
that at all.
So for me to interrupt you sometimes
Agreed.
When I've actually like I feel, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I've let you go on a lot of things and told him to be quiet and let you finish and da da da, and gone back and forth on things. So when I actually feel like I actually am. Probably the most knowledgeable person on trans issues in here because I've lived in queer houses. I'm probably a little genderqueer. Like a lot of things like that, I interrupted you because you were interrupting me when I was trying to make a point.
Okay. So I was just asking a question and I felt like I didn't get to fully ask it. But the question is, if gender is a social construct, as we just elaborated that race is in fact a social construct, we have to if we're arguing that it's not a social construct, and we're saying that there are competing souls between masculine and female spirits.
Competing? I don't know if it's competing.
Like not competing, but differing. If there's differing spirits and essences of masculinity and femininity,
equally human though, of course.
Equally human, then you do have to talk about different types of human. If you don't agree with that, which I don't think that there is fundamentally different, because I always go back to this. I say
different flavors.
No, I say what makes a person the most human, or when a human's their most human, it's when they're a baby. It's when that's when they're at their purest state. And all babies along any gender or race are selfish, greedy, just scared, paranoid, attention seeking. And that's the pure part.
I think
part.
You just explained Trump, by the way. But
yeah, but that's the pure part. And if that's the pure part, there's no actual, like, you don't see female babies and male babies. What are the real differences between the two babies and the way they behave? I don't know any study that says female babies do this and male babies do that.
I don't know about that.
I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I don't know it to exist.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I hear that.
And if we're going to talk about what's masculine and what's bad and what's feminine and what's bad or what's good on both sides.
I don't know what's good or bad.
We have to figure out what's really human and what's really, are we talking in conversation about people being different, or are we just castigating different spectrums of humanity? That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I think it's probably that one, different spectrums of humanity.
In which case, saying that I'm born a male or female is a logical fallacy in that world. In a world where masculinity and femininity aren't actually different types of human.
I actually agree with you.
Spectrums along the whole thing.
I probably wouldn't tell my child. I mean, honestly, I'm such a hippie fuck. Let's be real. But if I ever have children, I probably won't label them as a gender unless they want me to.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I'm cool with that too.
That's all I was trying to say. I wasn't going anti-trends. I was just saying I think that it's important to
help people understand.
Understand right. What they are before you tell them what they do.
And why people would be confused about it.
Yeah. It's new. It's brand new to a lot of people.
It's not new, but I hear. But it's becoming new.
I mean, to a lot of people, it's brand new.
I mean, to a lot of people, but I mean, anybody.
It's understandably brand new to a lot of people.
You know who I blame?
Who?
White gay men. Gay men in the 60s, if you want. Okay, so you know who started the Stonewall riots? It was Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, two trans women of color. And you can watch speeches of Sylvia Rivera giving in Washington Square Park, screaming her head off about like the oppression of her sisters and like screaming and screaming and screaming and white gay men booing her. So like there's definitely I actually think the LGBT movement has totally covered or like totally like ignored trans issues for, you know, 50, 60 years, and now it's coming to a head where people are like, this is ridiculous. Like, now you have the gay marriage. What are you going to do for trans? Because the Human Rights, whatever, Human Rights Association or whatever, what is that thing
human
called?
Human Rights Campaign.
Campaign. It actually does not stand up for trans issues as much as they probably should.
Probably not, because there's too much, like, why can't it just be a free sex movement and you don't have to qualify different types of experiences along sexual spectrums?
Because
why
then,
it be
LGBT, then it can be an erasure. Well, then it can become an erasure thing. It can become an erasure thing, and
of
then
what?
Of trans lives. Because what probably would happen is if they were like, "Oh, it's a free sex movement or a free sexuality movement," what would happen is the poly white yuppie people would totally co-opt the shit out of that, and so would the.
Well, we already have,
but they already do that anyway.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is
LGBT
like,
issue. All the letter issues are used to subjugate the B issue.
I mean, of course, but what I'm saying is if we gave it a cover term, I feel like it would be even more.
Mm. Like, is bi even really an experience in this country where you're being oppressed, really?
Yes.
Is it? Because I feel like we should have gotten the B.
It's not a major oppression, but there's definitely, I mean.
You know how much I wish people thought the B was black? We would get way more policies.
So I will say this, that I was reading an article about bi women last night, and actually, like, I consider myself more pans because I really don't give a fuck what gender I date. But there's definitely some stuff going around where it's like bi women are not really real, like a denial of your
But there's no
experience.
Policy being written to lessen or...
Oh, no policy. No, there's definitely no systemic.
And so my issue with the LGBTQ movement is that they tend to operate and function in a way where they're not necessarily identifying what the infrastructural things of oppression are, but they get to operate a lot of space in the political, you know, atmosphere.
Well, if they identified them, a lot of them would be trans issues.
Yeah, and you know, I think if you really talk about, you know, which community is most able to defend itself in an oppressive society, it's the gay community. They have the most ears to people of power. Not really.
I mean, every single person picked on the
Republicans
cabinet
are
is
already
anti-LGBT. Every single
in the cabinet,
person.
But you know what? Republicans are still actively growing within the gay community every year. Every year. They're already represented along both political spectrums. But they have representatives and liberals.
Damn, I wish we could go another hour.
Yeah. I just want everybody to love each other and remember that black people have it the hardest. And so we have to, like, whenever we're talking about our shit, we have to go, wait a second, though.
I mean, obviously,
think, what if I was black? Okay, maybe we should talk about that more.
I mean, I think that I honestly, probably the hardest person, people in society are queer black people. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right?
Or, yeah.
I mean, if we want to combine all the, that's an intersectionality, right?
Yeah, but if they're queer and black, the thing hurting them most is the black part because of the lack of incest.
You don't think that like trans folks are like super duper oppressed?
I'm saying you have to have a tiered structure of facing it. This intersectional thing tends to create false equivalencies between movements, and certain groups are hurt more than others. That's all.
Okay, but like, I guess what I'm saying is you think that it's like safer to be a trans person in the world? Like, you don't think trans people get the crap beat out of them all the time? I guess what I'm saying is like...
No,
like,
they do all the time, and a lot of it by black men.
So right. I guess what I'm saying is that's why I said, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to fucking argue which makes somebody's life harder. I mean, if you're trans or black, like, we need to be taking...
I just think we have to, before we talk about what feels going to be... I don't know. I just think a lot of this talk isn't really moving anything in a direction where people are being helped. Like, Trump won. I think we've spent 6 years talking about all the different ways to be liberal.
Yeah, we never talked about Aleppo. We kind of
about Aleppo. Actually.
Okay, well, here's what we're gonna do. Okay, I'm gonna.
It's my fault.
It's not everybody's fault. It's mostly my fault. It's my show. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna say thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. What would save the world? Thank you for listening. Tune in next week, and what's going to happen is we're going to have the first couple minutes are going to be both Patrick and Darren again. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Darren, for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Listen to the Apocalypse on Radio Free Brooklyn.
What up?
Everyone has a spirit animal. Some people have a permanent, consistent spirit animal. But I have a different spirit animal every single day. What is my spirit animal today? Today, my spirit animal is gentrification, because I really just want to walk into a room and make it my own. Shiny, but with less heart. I really just want everything in my room to smell local, but only my version of local. Today, my spirit animal is Kanye West, because Kanye, duh. Hello and welcome to The Free Thinker with Siddhartha G. Omniverse, your favorite, most logical segment of What Would Save the World. Have you experienced proper ego death? Maybe if you had, you wouldn't hate white dudes so much. Do you know how many amazing things white dudes have done? Stop judging me. This has been a very concise, logical, and honest segment of The Free Thinker of Shiva's Cloud. Kill your ego, open your third eye, turn on your eighth circuit. End feminism, the fake feminism like you can hear on What Would Save the World, and end the war on men. Me and Shiva will destroy it if you don't.
The music you heard on the intro of the show is by William Mulsum. You can find his music on soundcloud.com/William Mulsum. Mulsum is spelled M-A-L-S-A-M.